Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And this is Great Awakenings on GlobalFreedomTV.com. I'm Scott Bennett, and we're joined by the great Mike Harris one more time. And we're going to be looking into a lot of the intelligence issues, information factors that are surrounding a variety of topics, from the Israeli-Hamas conflict to the United States, now increasingly coming under attack through this, how this is going to evolve, as well as Ukraine, and what the latest reports are on that, as well as what we see unfolding against Donald Trump. So we're going to jump right in. Mike, it is great to see you again. It is always a pleasure. I've got a video I wanted to play before we jump in, but let me...
Well, LT, thank you for inviting me on once again. Glad to be here. And hit the video. Let's go.
Let me play this. It sets the tone for what's happening in Israel, and specifically the United States vessels and personnel that are coming under attack. I wanted to get your opinion on this entire report. I don't think there's anybody better. Here, let's play this first. This is an interview that we did on RT.
Meanwhile, U.S. military bases have come under attack in both Syria and Iraq. Other sites were hit by rockets and drones, but no serious injuries were reported. Separately, Washington says an American Navy destroyer shot down two missiles apparently launched towards Israel from Yemen. Former U.S. Army officer Scott Bennett says these incidents point to a dynamic power struggle across the Middle East.
Well, we are witnessing the increased drone attacks upon the United States naval vessels precisely because the United States has given full authority and its support behind Israel in its current, I would say, genocide operations against the Palestinians. And this has inflamed the surrounding Muslim populations in Syria, in Yemen, in Iraq, in Jordan, in Egypt, in Iran, in Pakistan. All of the Muslim nations in the Middle East are now witnessing the United States as not a fair and honest broker for peace, but a one-sided ally that Israel has a green light to engage in crimes against humanity and war crimes. So as a result, this is generating a unified hostility from a variety of groups in Syria, in Yemen, attacking U.S. forces with drones, with all sorts of asymmetric weaponry. So it's without a doubt a confederacy of different groups in different areas of Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, essentially seeing the U.S. as a target, and then aiding and abetting the crimes that Israel is generating against Palestine. So this is a response to the U.S. policy. Those are the main.
So, Mike, you know, I wanted to address this issue of the United States coming under attack, the United States soldiers and different bases that are in Iraq, that are in Syria, that are elsewhere. How do you see this evolving in this Israeli-Hamas Muslim war that seems to be brewing up? With the anticipation of more and more Muslims joining the fight. I'll hand it to you to give us your assessment. Go ahead.
If you recall, when Iraq and Afghanistan first started, the word around the Muslim world was that the U.S. was acting like crusaders. And we're going back in, military presence. We went over there, the United States killed a lot of people, you know, Iraqis and Afghanis, a lot of people. And they didn't do anything to deserve what we gave them. We were over there to grab resources and other, you know, to exploit things, to pump up the military industrial complex and to, you know, rape, loot, and pillage the natural resources of both countries. And that's what they did in Iraq. They did it again in Afghanistan, but the primary cash crop there was opium. So that's what the United States did. It's why we stayed behind for 20 years. You know, both of those countries never had anything to do with 9/11, and that was the whole justification for going in there. And the country that did 9/11, which was Israel, walked on it. And now we're going to defend the country that set us up to be attacked. It just proves that the United States is a Zionist occupied government and that the will of the people here does not matter. Sad to say it, but that's what it illustrates. You can't call Iraq successful. You can't call Afghanistan successful. We've lost our ability to fight wars. They made some strategic decisions in how the U.S. arms itself and how it utilizes those arms, relying instead of on robustness of the system, but relies on the sophistication of the technology. Now, you and I have discussed obliquely the tooth-to-tail ratio. And for those of you out there who don't know what that is, that the tooth is the combat soldiers you put in the field, and the tail is the number of support people that have to support that combat soldier in the field, whether it's a pilot, whether he's infantry, you know, whatever his MOS, you know, special forces, Navy, so anybody. He can be in a tank, he'd be in the armor group, but you know, how many soldiers requires how much support? And the thing that was missed by our Defense Department planners was that as the sophistication of the systems increases, the tail becomes longer. It takes more men to support each combat soldier in the field. So infantry is the least, you get the most teeth with the least tail. But you look at an F-35 fighter jet and you get a lot more tail than you have teeth. Now, granted, the capabilities of the F-35 are superior to an infantry company, but it takes a lot of people to support that aircraft. I mean, both domestically and abroad, and where the aircraft actually is. And it takes a lot of spares, a lot of stuff. So did the U.S. make the right set of decisions in how we've armed our military, number one? And then number two, you look at our competitors. The Russians have taken a different approach, and they're putting as many cost-effective, sophisticated platforms they can, but they're not overdoing it on the sophistication, not on the electronics, not on the stealth, not on all these other things. They're really putting up extremely high-performance fighter jets, and they do quite well. And you know, back in the Soviet days, the MiGs always had an advantage over anything the U.S. could put in the field. Or in the air, actually. But that's one of the things that our military is going to learn this hard lesson by when they go to fight other military alliances or other military forces, that they're going to bump into an adversary that does not have a cumbersome tooth-to-tail ratio, but instead is, you know, much lighter. It goes back to what the Marine Corps used to say, that is, every man's a rifleman. And that's kind of how our adversaries look at their military forces, that everybody fights. And I don't care if you're the cook, I don't care if you're the painter, I don't care what you do. When push comes to shove, you pick up the rifle and you go. And our military is way, way, way far away from that. I don't see the discipline, hardness required for us to put a military that can compete with that. And even if it was just ground operations and air support being equal on both sides, our guys will still get their ass kicked because the mindset is not there. As I said, the military is run by bureaucrats and administrators. We haven't seen a leadership class out there in a long time. In fact, many of the colonels who show that ability are riffed out and not promoted to brigadier because they're uncontrollable. You know, the likes of Patton and MacArthur really rattled the powers that be, the deep state, if you will. That these guys would actually talk back and say, no, you're doing the wrong thing. And MacArthur wanted to go into North Korea, go to China if we had to. So we're going to end up fighting them anyway, might as well. You know, Patton, the same thing. I want to go all the way to Moscow. Let's clean this up right. And they were both prevented from doing it. And these are leadership guys who get things done that would shape world events even more positively, but they weren't allowed to. And so our military has fundamental issues. They can't recruit the people they need right now. They're running about 15% deficit of the recruiting roles across all services. And that's a tough place to be. So now they're talking conscription. You know, that in itself, you know, here's got, I don't mind the idea of conscription, but I don't want to do it with this government because I don't trust these guys to treat my son or daughters or my life if I was a young man well, that they would throw me away. It's like what we saw Zelensky doing in Ukraine. He didn't care about how many losses he took because they were just Christians. And he was putting them in the meat grinder. He wants to get rid of them anyway. And so we have Jewish management here as well. So I wouldn't want my son or daughter going to fight over there on a cause that they sanction. These neocons are dangerous. And I don't want any American youth being conscripted to fight it in that thing, because you don't have a choice on it. And that's just how I think. I mean, if we had a better government, you know, with a little bit of not the corruption that this one has, if we had a legitimate cause to fight, like the invasion on the southern border, I would be proud to serve in such a military, and I'd be proud to have my son serve in such a military. Going off on these wars that have no purpose, that doesn't benefit the American people in any manner at all. It may benefit the donor class to the political parties, but it does not benefit, you know, the working stiff out there, guys who go to work for a living and pay the taxes. And that's where our illusion of a democratic republic has got to come to an end, because we're living in an oligarchy now that is run by the special interest donor class. If you're a billionaire, you hire the right lobbyist, and you want a piece of legislation passed, or, you know, something given a favorable tax status, or you commit some crime and, you know, you just pay a fine for it, you don't go to jail. That's what you do. That's what's going on in this country. And, you know, we have to decide, who are we as a people? You know, we have the open border. You know, the statistics will appall you, but, you know, that first amnesty that Reagan granted was only supposed to be for 800,000 people. Okay. So he grants the amnesty, 3.2 million people took him up on it. So we gained 3.2 million new citizens overnight. All right. What people don't talk about is that we've had seven other amnesties since then, and we keep getting new citizens. Well, the number is in excess of 30 million plus new citizens via amnesty. And then you have the anchor baby phenomena that is here, which, by the way, that has never been adjudicated in the Supreme Court. It is operating off a presumption that of the interpretation.
Let me enter that right there. I mean, we've looked at that and talked about it in the past. And theoretically, if you come back to first principles, citizenship in the United States, an American citizen, that is a blessing, that is a honor that is given to children born to American citizens in the country. And it is an honor. It is a, you know, there's a benefit. There's you're being benefited in some way by getting this American citizenship, which means if it's a congratulatory, you know, thing of honor, it's grandfathered in from your legal parents, legal American citizens, you cannot give it to someone who is illegally at war with the country. And you are at war with the country when you break its laws. So someone that comes in illegally is coming in at war with the country, and you cannot confer upon them a blessing, a benefit, or a title of honor to someone that's at war with you. Nor can you, someone who is, you know, on a plane from China going to Europe, and it has to land in America because of an engine failure, and the woman is pregnant, and suddenly she has a baby on the plane on the tarmac. Sorry, that child is not an American citizen just because it came out on American soil. There is a principle, there is an honor, there's a bestowment that happens. So, what, you know, she's the baby is a citizen of the mother's from wherever she came from. So this whole thing has been completely perverted and corrupted, just like the refugee resettlement program.
The refugee Scott, you touched on the next thing I was going to talk about. That is how they use our virtues against us. But let's finish up on this Israel, because that's how we really open this.
Well, let me ask a tactical question then, because I really want to get to how the game board is going to be shaping up. And as I see it, you have the United States with three carriers that are moving into position with a variety of naval vessels off of the Gaza coast on the Mediterranean. You have the Israeli 316,000 soldiers preparing allegedly for a ground assault. You've got the Israeli Air Force pummeling, destroying all of the buildings in Gaza, killing 5,000 Palestinian women and children and innocent civilian people. And you know, then you have the Hamas fighters somewhere, you know, in the tunnels and stuff. Then you have Hezbollah up north in Lebanon, 100,000-man army. You've got Syria up there, which is quite proficient. You have Iraq to the east. You have Iran to the east, which is the real gorilla in the room. And then you have Egypt, and you have Saudi Arabia. You have all of these Muslim nations that are now going to be calling for a jihad in their mosque meditations and their messages to the people who come into the mosque, which is going to amplify their you know, go fight the crusade and rescue women and children, and you'll go to heaven, avoid the torments of the grave. So we haven't even started on the whole Muslim convergence on Israel. But, you know, then you have Russia, you have China. And China has already put its backing behind Russia. Russia and China won't let Iran fall. You have India, which has a lot of Muslims. Basically, all of the countries that have a lot of Muslims or is a Muslim nation, the political leaders are being very careful to go with whatever their people want, or else their neck could be, you know, in a noose. Their head could be in a basket. So all of these parts are lining up. And I'm wondering, how do you see the order of battle going? You know, from Israel invading, then the Hezbollah stepping in, and then the United States doing airstrikes with A-10s, and then all sorts of mudslinging and shit slinging and knife and grenade and all sorts of firefights break out. And somewhere in between there, all of the Mediterranean ships of the United States are sunk and sent to the bottom, because of highly proficient submersibles and torpedoes and hypersonic missiles, many of which Russia has. How do you see the order of battle playing out, Mike?
I just looked up here. Approximately almost 2 billion people are Muslim in the world. You know, that's a lot of people. Out of the 7.5, 7.8, whatever it is now, almost 2 billion are Muslim. That's more.
And what
than,
percentage is favorable towards Palestine?
Yeah, the favorable, it's favorable. You know, and the U.S. had an opportunity
100%.
Right after the 1973 Yom Kippur War. And that is, you know, the U.S. could have gone in as an honest broker and brokered an honest peace. But they chose not to, because Israel is busy blackmailing, bribing, intimidating, winning support for all things Israel, regardless. And our gutless politicians who took the bribe, or who fell into the honey trap, or had their kid threatened, you know, whatever, they didn't have the balls to stand up, because, you know, the Israelis are ruthless. I mean, just absolutely, as a people, the people of Judea, of Ashkenazi Judea, are ruthless people. And they're not much physically, but they will stab you in the back and just shred you every other possible way. They are to be feared and respected, because they're deadly. They're deadly. But they have done such crimes against the Palestinian people that it's, I've watched this 75 years, and well, my entire life. You know, I'm getting along in the tooth. I was a little kid. I remember this forever. Okay, I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I don't want to give it any thought. Don't want to give it any energy. Whatever Israel gets is what they've earned. You know, they earned it. Now, I've said publicly that if they want to get out of the mess they're in, they can do a couple of things to make it better. Okay, they can't bring anybody back to life. But what they can do is, number one, they can redistribute the land they've confiscated from the Palestinians and start giving it back. You can't drive these people off the land that they've lived in for, you know, 2,000 years or more. And that's what Israel is trying to do. They're trying to genocide these people. And you stop killing them is one thing you can do as well. And then apologize. I mean, you know, if you don't apologize to these people, the chances are 100% they're going to kill you down to the last man. And they learned your lessons that you taught the world by hunting down the Nazis and tracking them wherever they went and bringing them to justice. Now, you Israelis have to understand that you taught the world that this has to be rectified. So the world is going to be coming after you for your crimes. And that is what a lesson that they seem to have forgotten, because it was how they went out and got a guy like Eichmann and drug him back to Israel to his you know, the trial and ultimate death. They have to remember that they're the ones who set the example. So the world is going to apply the same standard to you. So that's something that I think terrifies them, because they know how long memories can be and how long the arm of the law can be. And so, you know, they could have just looked the other way, it's done, it's over, go home and heal. But no, they had to go do it. They had to go, you know, dig us out and chase down, you know, you got a 89-year-old retired steel worker up in Ohio someplace. They went and drug out of his retirement home and had to deport back because he was a guard there. This guy was probably a corporal, best case. And, you know, he had nowhere else to go, nothing to be. He was there. He had no choice of it. But they're going to punish him. And, you know, we need to keep that model in mind. And we need to whisper that into the Islamic context we have, that, you know, just you do unto them as they've done unto you. You know, live by the golden rule, Israelis. Live by the golden rule, Zionists. Here you go. You know, do unto others as you would have done to you. Well, this is how you've done unto others. So don't be expecting to get a break when others do unto you, guys. Don't be expecting, because you set the example. You did this. You're the ones who put off that first bomb in the King David Hotel, and it's been a nightmare since then. And shame on you, and may you get everything that you have earned. You are not my friend. You're not the friend of my country. You are the worst, most despicable enemy that anyone could ever have, because you fool people and you try to convince people that you're the good guy, and you are not. You have been just low life. So there you go.
Well, you know, the order of battle that I see, and that's what I really want to look at, is the Israelis. Let me finish. The Israelis are going to engage in aggressive invasion in Gaza. They're going to be hit from Lebanon and Hezbollah. They're also going to be hit from Iran. They're going to be hit from Iraq. They're going to be hit from every direction in a slow, you know, counter. I mean, a guerrilla war. This is going to turn into a guerrilla war and a slow encirclement and a besiegement. But then the United States is going to step in. And that's where I see Russia, China, and Iran. And I particularly see Russia giving missiles or torpedoes to the right people to sink every ship of the United States in the Mediterranean, because, you know, the Mossad and the U.S. have been against Russia in Ukraine, and this could blow up in a half a dozen ways. But I also look at what is going to be happening in the United States. Are they going to use this to implement a domestic police state shutdown like we've never seen before? Are they going to be setting off false flags? Domestic, you know, Hamas strikes again. Hamas and the right. I mean, I already heard it today on public radio. They were saying Hamas and the white, the right wing extremists, right? They're painting the picture that Hamas and right wing extremists are going to be, you know, engaging in all sorts of disruption internally. And I could see the U.S. government using this to try and shut down internally the United States. But I'll put it back to you to get your assessment of how we expect to see this roll out over the next month or so.
Let me start with your last question first, and that is domestically in the U.S. And that is the border has been deliberately left open now for a very long time. And, you know, on this Biden administration in particular, it's been left wide open on purpose. And to have the excuse of, well, now we can crack down internally on all terrorists, the white supremacist type, as well as Hamas. Everybody's going to be scared to death that Hamas is in the country. Whether they are or not is irrelevant. Everybody's going to be afraid of it because of power of suggestion. And people are going to be, they watch this border, we watch this nightmare of people we don't want in this country. And they won't stop it. And so they've got another game here. Part of that game is, like you said, to have an excuse to implement martial law, go door to door, take guns. Oh, he's got too many guns. He must be a white nationalist terrorist. I bet Hamas is around here sometimes too. And you know, that's what they're gearing us up for, while they're going to empower these military age men and probably give them a path to citizenship if they serve in either the military or the new domestic police force that's going to be constructed here. So,
well, you know, the other question is the COVID-19 vaccine. That, if it is injected into 90% of the Israelis, the question becomes, when the heart hits adrenaline mode, when you go into combat, are we going to see a mass death die-off of this Israeli army? Like we've seen athletes dropping down dead. I mean, there was a U.S. contractor that was in the base in Iraq that when they did a drone attack, this guy died of a heart attack. And I fully equate that to the COVID-19 vaccine. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, do you see this massive die-off? I remember you had said before you thought they were going to do a dirty bomb or some sort of nuclear device over Gaza. I'll hand it to you to see what you see coming up. But I think the vaccine is going to be interesting to watch.
Well, I think that that was whispered in my ear as a concern by a Middle Eastern area resource that I've got that's well acquainted over there, that piece of information. Have I corroborated it anywhere else? Not yet, but I'm working on it. But if they do that, we'll know soon enough, because that would be the next step that the Israelis would do. I just see these people, that there's they have no shame. There's nothing I will not put past them. But what I think is going to happen here is that unless the Israelis come to some agreement to give back, you know, big portions of Palestine and try to carve out a Jewish homeland there, if you will, even smaller than what Israel already is. But, you know, give back and then apologize and really plead for peace and ask forgiveness from the Muslims of the world for, you know, the crimes they've committed against the Palestinians and against everyone else as well. Because, you know, their whole dream here, this world domination, they've not forsaken that. That's what they're still trying to do. I need to remind people that the people in Israel who've been brutalizing these Palestinians for the last 75 years, these are the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of the Bolsheviks in Russia that started the Bolshevik Revolution. And over the course of 70 years, killed 100 million Russian Christian men, women, and children. Now they're in Palestine killing millions of Palestinian Muslim men, women, and children. And when they started Israel, the first thing that the Israelis did was went around town to town and killed all the women, killed all the men, raped all the women. That's what they did, right off the chute, right out of the box. And the killing and the abuse have been going on ever since. And so the Muslim, like I said, the Palestinians have to fight back. Because if they don't fight back, they're going to be genocided. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they leave things alone, if they do nothing, if they go along to get along, there won't be a Palestinian left in 20 years. They'll all be gone. And so what do they have to lose? Then you look at Gaza, and 50% of the population is under 14 years old, and 70% is under 18. These are all just kids who've had their parents and grandparents killed. What do you think is going to happen to these kids? You understand the angerness and the bitter. You've created a bitter enemy here with this. And it's going to be hard to get over that. You know, so like I said, they have done to others as they want done to them.
But, you know, the other thing is the massive failure of the world, the massive failure of the United Nations, any body politic. And I realize you had a unipolar world essentially since 1948 essentially now, really. But, you know, the Palestinian areas that were, Palestinians were expelled, the Israelis took over. Why hasn't the United Nations simply gone in and said, you know, or BRICS nations or a whole group of nations gone in and said, Gaza is the Palestinian state? Yes, and we're going to add to that different areas, but Gaza is the Palestinian state. Trump could have done that when he went up and put the Jerusalem embassy and the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. He could have at the same time said, I'm putting the embassy up there. I'm also putting a U.S. embassy in Gaza. You have to start somewhere. You have to start from the ground center and work out. And the stupidity of people not saying Gaza is the Palestinian state, plant a U.S. embassy. United Nations, plant a UN headquarters. Every nation around the world, get an umbrella that has your country's name on it and stick it in a pile of rubble and call that where your future embassy is going to be for the Palestinian state. Russia, Brazil, India, China, South Africa, wherever it is, you know, they have to recognize Gaza as belonging to the Palestinians. And failure to do that just gives the Israelis license to what? What are they really doing? They're administering? They're not administering. They're prison guards starving these people in this open air concentration camp. And they have them cut off on the water level. The ships are not allowing any aid, any humanitarianism. They've cut off the water and the food and the electricity. Turkey went in 2008 with a ship, and the Israelis boarded that ship and killed four Turkish citizens. And Turkey pulled out its embassy and cut off diplomatic relations. That's the other thing, Mike. Why isn't the world and the UN and all these nations, Brazil and Russia and the BRICS nations, why aren't they going in? Why isn't every Muslim nation going, you know what? We're tearing up the Abraham Accords that Jared Kushner pushed and Trump, you know, clapped his hands about. We're tearing that up and we're tearing out every Israeli embassy in our country, and we're pulling our embassy out of Israel and our consulates. The U.S. did that to Russia in San Francisco by shutting down their consulate, taking over their property. Why isn't every other nation doing the same thing to Israel? Your embassy's gone. Your consulates are gone. We don't want anything to do with a monstrosity like you because you're not behaving like a civilized human being. So we're not going to give you the dignity of a place in society. You belong to the animal realm. We're treating you like animals. I'm wondering, where's the diplomatic warfare in this?
Well, Scott, you just brought up another thought of mine. And this is something, because when you said everybody needs to cut them off, and they do, but for another reason as well. The Israeli government is now talking about using nukes themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay. They've not signed the non-proliferation treaty. So ergo, no one in the world should allow any contact with Israel at all. No commerce, no trade, no communications, no banking, no services, nothing. Because they're in violation, possessing nuclear weapons and not signing the non-proliferation treaty. Our government is forbidden to do business with them, yet we can't give them enough money quick enough. So why are we not obeying our own laws? And why do we have a president of the United States advocating that we violate the statutes that are in place regarding nuclear weapons and the countries that have them and how we treat them? So that is a really big deal. And Israel's gotten away with this. They've had Dimona open, you know, since Kennedy was alive. So, you know, the estimates there are between 200 and 400 nukes, maybe double or triple that, who knows? But they've got them. And we've not done anything about that. We've turned a blind eye. Colin Powell said something about this probably 4 or 5 years ago about nuclear weapons that Israel possesses. And nobody's done anything about it. No one wants to say, hey, what's the elephant in the room here? And now that the Israeli government is speaking about possibly using nukes, that's a different story. I mean, look at that Levin last week. Israel needs to launch every nuke they have and wipe out every Arab nation there is. I mean, you know, listen to what these guys are saying. They're telling us that they're in violation of this, and yet they're expecting us to still fund them. Why are we doing that? Why would the United States do that? These are not our best friends. They are not our closest ally. These are the most treacherous vipers you could ever, you know, come across. And we're laying down with them, you know, and it's a mistake. And back to your comment about sending three carrier groups into the Mediterranean, sitting ducks. I'm sorry, yes. The Mediterranean is not a big lake. It's kind of a smaller lake compared to the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Indian. It's don't get me wrong. It's but it's called a sea for a reason, not the Mediterranean Ocean. You know, because it's landlocked essentially, except for getting through the Gibraltar. And so, why would you concentrate so much power there unless you're preparing to sacrifice them? Mm-hmm. I mean, we sacrificed a good part of the fleet, mostly the older part of the fleet. In Pearl Harbor, you know, Roosevelt knew they were coming. he said, well, let's just leave the old battleships there. You know, they have their usage. You know, let's let the Japs, you know, give our people something to fight about so we can go to war proper. And I think that's what they're going to do with one or two of these carrier groups. I think they're going to sacrifice them.
But, you know, I don't think that's going to have the effect that they intend. I don't think the American citizens are going to rise up in a Rooseveltian World War II rebel yell, clamor for war, let's go, we'll get them all. I don't think that's going to happen because, number one, the American public are dismally incompetent, stupid, medicated, and cowardly and schizophrenic on so many different levels when you compare them to the population of 1941. Present company excluded, but for the most part, we are the laughing stock of the world that doesn't know what a boy or a girl is, and the transgender religious cult, and we're looking to worship the environment and cut off gas. I mean, the layers of our ignorance is beyond pale. And Medvedev and many others have said you're witnessing the decay and the collapse of Western society. They're completely withering and dying. And I am in agreement with this. And I know you are, and Jim Fetzer and many of us are totally in agreement, because you can't deny the physical sciences of what is happening to America. If these ships are bombed and destroyed and sunk, I think the Americans are going to say, we have no business being there. Pull us out completely. We have nothing to do with this. We're not going to be going to war for Israel. We've been trying to stop this war machine for 20 years. We voted for, Bush because he promised compassionate conservatism. That was a lie. Then he brought in 9/11 and triggered the Jewish Zionist Project for a New American Century. Then they voted for him to kind of, well, just close it off. Let's finish this and get home in 2004, 2006. And then that didn't work. So they voted for Obama, hoping that he would change things. No, he just went the way of the military-industrial complex. Then they voted for Trump in the hopes that he was going to do what he said. And to an extent, he did. But to another extent, he didn't, because he's putting up military troops in Syria. He's bombing Bashar Assad with cruise missiles, believing the lies of chemical war weapons being used by Bashar Assad. Bullshit. He's given weapons to Ukraine. The stupidity of Trump giving weapons to Ukraine, fomenting Poroshenko's genocide, that's another crime against humanity. And he never pardoned Assange or Snowden or anything. Trump didn't do anything on these levels. Well, you build a wall, you cut taxes. Mr. Pillsbury Doughboy could do that. Anybody could do the general play of the Republican plan. But, he didn't really step in and do much. So I just think the American people are not going to engage in war. And I think it's going to set off, Mike, a series of explosions in America. I think you're going to see a lot of domestic false flag attacks, with Mossad doing it in Europe as well, trying to provoke Americans to hate the Muslim, hate the Arab, hate white, white Anglo-Saxon Trump supporting conservatives, and using this to I think really radically, I think we're on the verge of the left and these Democrats becoming the Bolsheviks of, what was it, 1917, when they overthrew the Tsar and the Russians. I foresee them, they see this, if they can trigger a war against Russia, against China, against Iran, all at the same time, and then say there are domestic enemies or traitors in amidst us, so we need to go and collect everybody's guns, everybody has to be vaccinated, everybody has to stay at home, everybody is essentially a prisoner until we win this war, says Gavin Newsom, as he comes in to replace Biden. Do you foresee America, and I think, of course, that would trigger a massive civil war and revolution, but do you see these foreign entanglements being used to trigger internal disruptions, an internal police state agenda by the Democrats?
Let me answer another question first, because it ties together. If we would lose a battle carrier, a carrier battle group, just one, do you know what that would do to the American dollar globally? It would crater it. People are de-dollarizing anyway, and our most powerful military asset has just got sunk. The dollar would lose 90% of its overseas buying power overnight. Okay.
Wow.
That would happen almost instantaneously. If it happened on a Friday, by Monday, a gallon of milk is going to cost you $30. You know, and gasoline is going to be worse. And so that would be a trigger event. That's going to cause some great discomfort among the population in this country. And that's going to get people out in the streets. I mean, literally in the streets, whether they're going out there to rob the grocery store, or because they can't afford the food anymore. Or, you know, my worst nightmare scenario is the grocery store has put up good security so nobody can come and steal, but the woman going out to her car unescorted without a man escorting her with an armed man, she could be easily robbed and her, you know, knocked to the ground and, you know, take her car to food, and they're off and gone. You know, but these are the things that I could see coming. I hope they don't. I pray they don't. But it could happen. If you would lose a carrier group, it would destroy the dollar overnight. Once crime was that big, the people would be crying. So we need a national police force to bring law and order. Please help us. And then the mandate of the national police force is going to creep as a function of time. And next thing you know, they're going to be the anti-terrorist police, because, like you said, they left the border open. So everybody is now suspicious that, you know, my next door neighbor is Hamas. And he might do something, or my next door neighbor is a white racist, and he might do something. He was a Trump supporter. He might do something. We stole that election. He's pissed about it. I mean, you know, there's all this going on in the background. So,
well, let me ask: where are the voices?
As hell.
Where are the voices like yours, or that would be resemble yours, that would stand up and say, "We knew you were going to do this. We knew this was coming. We know this is your plan. We know what you're doing." I mean, to an extent, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jordan and Gates, they talk a little bit about it. They've kind of thrown out their credibility on a lot of this stuff by throwing all of their worship towards Israel. All the money that we're going to give to Ukraine, now we have to give to Israel. Really? That's the hypocrisy? Rand Paul saying this too? But where are the voices, Mike? And I don't think they're going to be silent, because I think people like you and me and our audience and others, you are going to have people rise up and say what you're saying. Saying, no, 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 you're not going to do
not
that.
So
you're
fast,
not going to
yeah.
do this over my dead body, and I will step in, and my friends will step in, and we'll take control of our street, our town, our neighborhood, our county, our state. We're not going your way. There, and when I see the natural reaction, the natural response from leaders, alpha male leaders like yourself and others, when they rise up going, no, 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 it ain't happening. Over my dead body, and I'll use lethal force if I have to. When that starts happening, some people are going to say, oh, that's an insurrection. That's a revolution. That's a civil war. That's a revolutionary war. It's a confirmation and an affirmation of our rights, and we're not waiving them. We took an oath to defend our rights, and we're not letting you turn us into a communist prison state. Call it what you will. But where are those voices? That's the real thing to watch. Yeah. I don't give a shit what the godless Democrat, transgender, homosexual crowds do. I care about where are the traditional family values leaders, where are they, and what are they going to be saying? And in the face of this demoniac, Bolshevik, communist, police state plan to use all of this chaos and disruption to transform America into their shithole District 9 dystopia.
Yeah, I like that movie District 9, by the way.
That's what the southern border is going to look like.
That's what it does. You ever saw that movie Elysium?
Yes.
The scenes of how the peasants on Earth live there is
yeah.
pretty grim. And that's Southern Cal.
That's it.
And so that's what this whole open border means for our kids and grandkids.
Yes.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
Is that's what our environment's going to be.
Yeah.
And it's tragic. It's sad. You know? And so we can stop this. As I've said many times, we have problems, but we have no problems we can't fix. But we just have to, you know, apply the ingenuity. We have to apply the thought, you know, the mental discipline to fixing them, and then have the political will to see it through. And that's the thing that so many people in the USA fail at, is the inability to see things through. They can start something, can they finish it? And that seems to be something that's lost. I mean, everybody gets a participation trophy these days. So You know, why should I work hard? Why should I try to be the fastest runner on the field? I'll get a trophy anyway. You know, and there's so much of that building up the losers' self-esteem that they cost the winners their self-esteem and their drive. And we can't let that happen. So see, here's the thing. The way this group operates is they operate under the cover of darkness. They operate stealthy. Everything they do is occulted. It's hidden from view. Whereas guys like you and I, we're straight up. We say we're going to do X, Y, and Z. We go do X, Y, and Z. These people tell they're going to do something, and they do just the opposite of it. They're not to be trusted in any aspect. But they will do crappy things to you. They'll do a no-knock raid to your home at 3 in the morning, and get you out of bed. You're
That's the
pretty
real danger
flat-footed.
too. That's the real danger are these knuckle dragging, lobotomized GI Joe, drunk on their own reflection. They love to wear military gear and camo, although many of them probably never even served in the military. These FBI, ATF, marshals, guardsmen, whatever you want to call them, who are, like peacocks, and they love to go around and follow orders, kick down doors, throw flashbangs, carry weapons like they're in a war zone. And they're not. They're in the American citizen's backyard, their boss's backyard, the American citizens that employ them. And yet we've all been turned into Palestinians living under the boot of Israel. The IDF coming in and training and mentally brainwashing our law enforcement agencies. And I've seen it happen personally to friends of mine, who weren't diplomatic in a confrontation, but did not deserve the tackling, the handcuffing that they got, and then they dropped all charges after they put them in
This is
jail.
our
And
mutual friend, right?
We are. I won't mention names, but I'll never forget that. And I thought, man, I know you people are stupid, but you are so stupid, and you're not repentant. And if you think you're going to be able to do that to Americans, you're going to have a lot of dead cops. You're going to have people running them over, hitting them with stone. I mean, really, Palestine, to their response to the Israelis, I could see that in America. If you have an oppressive police force that thinks that they can behave badly, particularly around white people, they know what happens when they pick fights with blacks. They get Black Lives Matter, and they get burning down Wisconsin, and they get mobs breaking into Target. But they think that they can mess with, molest, harass, and abuse white people because we're back the blue, right? We're supportive of police. I just see that day ending very badly and bloodily for them. If what you described, Mike, where you have a collapse of the finances because of the fleet being sunk, which I do think is going to happen, I bet that. I see them being the flashpoint in a lot of bad ways.
Well, Scott, if the currency collapses and there's no money to pay the police, they won't go to work. You know, that's another thing there, just to keep in mind. But like I said, we have no problems we can't fix. You know, we've got to start thinking in advance of what do we want the world we're going to be creating after this falls apart? How do we want it? Do we want that to look? That's our next set of challenges, because failing to plan is planning to fail. So we have to plan now to get through this coming turbulence. And then once on the other side of the turbulence, how are we going to reform our country and our government to make it so we can never be put in this position again? So that we can't have people come in and corrupting our politicians and having our politicians acting in toxic manners and agencies acting toxically to the citizens. That's not how it's supposed to be. That's what dictatorships overseas do. That's not what happens here. And it's incumbent upon us to begin thinking now is how do we never let this happen again? You know, the one thing about republics, I didn't know. I always thought republic was one of the best forms of government, but it's also the most easily corrupted. And the reason that Caesar crossed the Rubicon is because the republic had become so corrupted that people welcomed him to restore order and honesty back to government. And you know, that's a dangerous place to be whenever you change from a democratic republic like Rome was, and we are, into an empire like that.
Yeah.
We have everything else is an empire. So if you don't want that, and I don't want that, how do we lay the groundwork now so that what survives comes out the other end in a functional, workable way that will benefit the people of the country? And so we've got all these things. We've got a million and five things we have to deal with that we can fix. I mean, do we want to let all these illegal aliens in and let them become citizens? I don't think so. Do we want to send them all back? Do we want to revoke the seven other amnesties we've had, send those 30 million people home because they didn't follow the rules either, and our government didn't honor the contract by not enforcing the penalties against the employers? So they kept coming. We've been bamboozled in a lot of ways. I mean, how do we restore competition back in the telecom market after Reagan consolidated with his telecom reform? You know, the same thing with the airlines. How do we bring these competitors back? How do we revitalize commerce within the country? And you know, truthfully, we don't need to do global commerce. We don't need it. We have everything we need in this country. We take advantage of competitive advantage of nations. I mean, if somebody can sell us aluminum bauxite ore cheaper than we can mine it here ourselves, yeah, buy it. But you know, how does that affect our economy? And if we had to, could we be completely internally focused? And I think we can, and I think we should strive to go that way and to not depend or not have an interdependency upon the rest of the world, but be able to stand alone as Fortress America. We're blessed with two oceans on either side. So nobody's going to come in. It's going to be hard to come in from the east, it's going to be hard to come in from the west. Even if China used every container they've got to fill them full of troops, they're still going to have a hard time moving enough of them in a coordinated manner to get them here. The reason the US did so well at Normandy was because all of Great Britain is a staging area. Without that, they couldn't have done it. And so, but that doesn't exist off our coast. So you know, we're pretty safe that way. But if this collapse happens, we're not going to be able to afford a $900 billion defense budget every year. Will we be able to afford 200, 300, 400 billion? I don't know. But we have to start rethinking what is the country going to look like if we only have 250 billion a year for defense instead of 900 billion. What are our priorities? How are we going to deploy those assets? What are we going to do? And these are the questions I'm putting together a white paper on this topic. And these are the questions I'm asking myself. I'm trying to get other people to think about as well, because one mind is good, two minds is better. You know, I want 1,000 people thinking about these type of questions, 10,000. And
Well, you know, this is the other issue too that we're looking at. I mean, that the internal domestic implosion of our institutions of law, FBI, Department of Justice, the attorney generals, the district attorneys being bribed and ideologically fanaticized by George Soros types. This just happened. Trump was fined, and I said they were going to do this. I said this from the very beginning, 6 months ago, not
Yes,
longer.
you did.
They're going to put a gag order on Trump. Then they're going to say he violated the gag order. This is what just happened. They put it on him. Now they've said he's violated the gag order because he was critical of the judge and the staff. This is so significant because the next thing they can do, they fine him $5,000, and the judge warned him of possible jail time if it happens again. So what I know they're going to do, Mike, they are going to say you violated the gag order a second time or a third time, and now we are going to put you into jail. You are remanded into custody, Mr. Trump. Bailiff, take the defendant away. You will have the bailiff and the police then arrest Trump, put his hands behind his back, and escort him into the police holding cell, and damn the Secret Service. You know, they may be even playing against him, but that is going to happen. They are going to put him into jail. And then the question is, are they going to kill him? Are they going to say he fell downstairs? Are they going to say he died of a heart attack? Are they going to say he killed himself like Jeffrey Epstein? But then after they put him in jail and kill him, I do think this is going to happen, sadly, unless there is, you know, some divine intervention, then you have a civil war revolution, because not that Trump's the best, but what they do to him, they do to everybody. And that tells me if they kill him, if they put him in jail, now you've crossed a line that no American can, you know, say we're anything other than a nation in distress. But Mike, I'll put it to you to see, what do you see coming with regards to
that? Well, if that happens, the question people have to ask is, do we storm the Bastille?
Yeah.
I mean, the Bastille was a prison. And they stormed it to get the people out who were unjustly incarcerated. And so the more things change, the more they stay the same. I guess you'll say that I can't say history repeats itself, but it sure rhymes. You know, I don't know, but I look at these crooked. I mean, do you think that guy might be Jewish?
This guy Jewish? Judge Agadon, what's his name? It says.
I think it might be.
Yeah, let's see. Justice Arthur Engoron. Justice Arthur Engoron. I don't know if he's Jewish. I bet you could probably look it up and see, because it says it in Wikipedia. But, you know, this is what I see happening. You know, that's the real question. Are they purposefully trying to trigger a civil war with the misguided expectation that they can suppress the white Anglo-Saxon and other people that stand up as the defendants of Trump, the defendants of the country? Do they think they can be crushed? Do they think that they can throw them into concentration camps? Do they think the United Nations and all these other agents that they brought in are going to suppress the Americans? I don't think so. See, that's the other thing. The American white Anglo-Saxon, if you will, and the others, you've got Vietnamese, you got Sikhs, you got Hindus, you got everybody in this country that's conservative in a sense. They could very well turn into guerrilla fighters fighting behind trees and rocks against these forces. But I think this is a very significant issue, and it's going to happen. Mike, I'll let you close us out because we got a few minutes left. But
Scott, I like the point you just made, and I'll look back. All you have to do is look at Vietnam, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and you realize that the U.S. military cannot fight a war. That we don't have the bureaucrats, the administrators who run our military don't know how to fight a war. They know how to fight a war and drag it on. They don't know how to win. And so if the Afghan goat herders can drive them out of the country, we can too. There it is. I mean, there's a lot of old country boys out there that aren't going to take this. And there's a lot of old cowboys out west aren't going to take this. And I tell you what, the blacks in the inner cities aren't going to take this. They're not going to like it any more than we do, you know. And so we're going to become ungovernable that way. And we will drive them out of our country. Mm-hmm. So is it going to be bloody? Yeah, it's going to be awful. It's going to be terrible. But if we lose a carrier group, you can count on the dollar being worth 10 cents on the dollar the next day. So.
See, I don't think you could accept the alternative. There is no alternative to freedom and liberty and the Constitution and your rights as an American and your right to be left alone, your right to have a family and a business and to associate with who you associate with and the freedom of speech. You can't enjoy all those rights and still live as a castrated, emasculated slave with a vaccine or a social credit score and no means of protection, and you're living in a camp number 7 or camp, you know, something by the arrogant Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, godless heathens. I just don't see that being feasible. I don't see Americans putting up with it. I know I wouldn't, and I know you wouldn't, but that's the generation. Those people between, I don't know, what are we looking at? 35 and 95, you know, everything under 35, 30, you know, I'm not sure about their willingness to stand up and fight and kill if necessary. But I know the older generations certainly would. And it almost seems like It's not just that that time is about upon us. It's about there are parties that want it and are pushing it. Lastly, Mike, what do you think about the Jim Jordan election House Speaker fiasco? Everyone's failing to advance him, which I find very sad because I think he'd be the best man for the job.
Well, you know what? I'm disappointed in that very much. I like Jim Jordan.
Yeah.
But I really think that the MAGA-oriented part of the party, the Freedom Caucus, if you will, should say, nope, Jim's our guy, and we're not going to do any house business. The government can shut down. Mm-hmm. Israel's not going to get a dime.
Yep.
All these things can just sit until you put the guy we want in, period. We didn't come this far to quit now.
Yeah.
And you know, you got to be willing to get your knuckles bloody.
Yeah.
And you're going to risk getting primaried, but you can primary them too. You know, so there's a little muscle on both sides, but these rhinos need to learn their place. And Jim Jordan is the most currently elected, most popular politician there is out there, is Jim Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, he's it. And Republicans, you know, he's number two to Trump right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and so you're denying a guy that the people like, and you're damaging your party and your cause. Oh, but you're a rhino, so it's really not your party. You're just pretending to be one because it was easier for you to get elected under that label. You're going to do what you want anyway.
Yeah.
And those, at least they've identified themselves. And now we know which ones to attempt to push out of office and to support their opponents in the primaries and do those type of things. So, you know, it's the trouble is if the vote's crooked, the vote's crooked. And they may win anyway. So I don't know. Can't tell you.
Stand your ground. Mike Harris, great to be with you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
RLT, thank you.
We appreciate it. We'll see how all this starts to plan out and keep praying. Pray without ceasing. Thank you, Tong, our producer, and thank you for joining us on GlobalFreedomTV.com. We will see you tomorrow. God bless. Good night.